don't know how long it's been. I don't know how much time would have passed between the last time we spoke and now. I feel like 3 lifetimes have happened since then. Maybe I should say that I'm on the 7th version now, but I'm not. This is still Independent Librarian Dynamic, Sean Kennedy the 6th. Broadcasting in Queen's English from sometime after now. If I remember correctly, you're listening to episode number 732.653.663.398.36.10. Or 10 if you want to be really accurate. You have to know that by listening to this, this is an unregulated broadcast. It's not something that any corporations have control of. And so you're violating your lister's license agreement. And you're probably going to be prosecuted for it. In violating your listener's license agreement, you're no doubt also violating your employment contracts or any expression permits or anything else that your company may or may not employ. But by listening, you risk prosecution, possibly eviction from your dwelling, or eventual termination. But if you're the one who would turn this off, chances are you need it more than anyone. So light your candles. It may serve or protect us all. I know that service protected me. I've got so much to tell you about. So much has happened. I just hope I can remember it all, and I hope I get it all right. Fate is a funny thing, you know. It's never what you think it is. Some people don't believe in fate, the eventuality of it all. Some people, you know, it's not your fate. If you believe in a fate, does that mean that everyone who killed themselves, you know, was that their fate? I don't know. I thought my fate was over, I'll tell you that, but I guess it wasn't. A while back, I can't even, you know the time's copywriting, but I can't even give you days on this one. I mean, I've been drugged up and so much has happened. But I remember I was moving through the deep wastelands. I was trying to do some exploration. I was trying to find something. I don't remember what I was looking for anymore, but I was out there. It was late one evening, and I was just about to make camp so I could stay out of the sun during the day, and I heard the roar of engines. They came at me from 3 sides. I mean, it's not like I carry a lot of hardware with me, even out here in the wastelands. I only had my Kukri, and that's about it. They were slavers. Out in the wastelands, anyone walking by themselves run the risks of slavers. They just take people. They sell them, usually to the highest bidder, go to slave markets. These ones were quiet, they were really good. I don't know how they found me, I don't know how they tracked it. I mean, I was staying to the low ground. I wasn't silhouetting myself against anything, but they found me somehow, and they came for me. After that, it was a matter of process. I mean, they hit me with some stun rounds and I hit the dirt. I was blacked out. Now from that point on, can't really give you too much accurates, but I can tell you what I think I figured out. See,
there's lots of, whenever you get taken by slavers, they jack you full of junk, eh? Like they have stim pens and they just nail you so that you're high all the time. You're completely, it's not like you're there. You can't even think logically. The junk is usually ancient, what used to be street drugs, and now street drugs have evolved, so things like heroin, morphine, things like that. They pump you so full of this crap, your teeth itch. I stripped of all my gear. I know that. That's standard practice. They stripped all my gear off. They stripped all my recording equipment. They stripped the head cam I got in the sticks. Everything was gone. And I remember becoming vaguely conscious in some kind of a steel box. It was a van of some kind the slavers used. It was unbelievably hot. The sun would beat down. They'd drive all day just looking for fresh meat. I was one of the first ones they got. When I came out of it, again, there was a young girl in the box with me. She'd been caught. I could see by her cataracts that she was born blind. She was blind now. I don't know if she was born blind, but she was blind. And I felt so bad for her. You know, I wished that she wasn't there. Young women, you know, they always wind up in the worst ways when they get caught by slavers. And she was so young. It wasn't long after that I got jacked again. I don't even know how long I spent high. If there was 2 hours between when I became lucid, or if it was 3 weeks before the time I got lucid, but the van slowly started to fill up. Scavengers mostly. People like myself. Treasure hunters. We all run the risk. Slavers have their problems too, because they gotta steer clear of soldiers. You really don't want to see what happens when soldiers get a hold of slavers. I mean, they kill everything. You gotta make sure also that you don't try to capture a soldier if you're a slaver. So if you try to make a move on them, they'll kill half your, well, they'll probably kill everyone. Anyways, we wound up and made it to just a tent bazaar. It was some preordained thing by the slavers. I mean, this is invite only, need to know kind of stuff. I remember getting dragged out of the box, the van. They got these neck come-alongs. It's like a big set of jaws that clamp around your neck, and they have you on a pole. They moved me naked up on top of the block. A little girl was brought up there with me. She went first. There's a flesh merchant who was trying to buy her. But there's someone off to the right. I remember the way he's dressed. He looked like some kind of a talent scout. Talent scouts are, they're pretty loathsome. They find young women. Because even now, the young woman who you can do what you want with is very, very handy to have. So, pays good money. And to be out here in the wastelands, it's one of the few places you could get them without records. The flesh merchant who was trying to buy her, I could tell he was a flesh merchant. Flesh merchants sell off organs, limbs, whatever. Went high, went very high. But eventually the flesh merchant lost. Went out to the talent scout. In a way, I suppose it was a good thing. It was better that she went to the talent scout, because, well, at least she'd stay alive. She was blind, but she'd be alive. She wouldn't be able to see whoever it was that was going to do whatever it was to her. If the flesh merchants had a god, her, well,
I mean, she probably wouldn't have survived and probably would have cut her up. She looked pretty healthy. Then it was my turn on the block. Of course, I'm not in that great a shape. I've been kicking around 6 generations. It's a lot of scars. Some of them you can see. Nobody really wanted to bid too much. I'm too old looking to really be of any use, and I haven't got the body for any kind of labor, so the flesh merchant picked me up for next to nothing. I remember him nodding his head like he just, I don't know, bought himself some scrap, and I felt the bite in the arm again, and I got jacked. Whatever the slavers were using was better quality than what this flesh merchant used. I had that dry feeling in my mouth, like my whole inside of my lungs, my mouth was one giant scab. I figured that in order to keep his costs down, he was probably selling me, jacking me on expired junk he couldn't sell. Merchants, you know, they sell everything, right? So if just like drugs have a half-life, you can't keep them for a long time. So if they expire, you should throw them away. But you got slaves, you might as well shoot them up and use it as a way to keep them calm. I don't even remember the trip. I don't know how far he took me. I don't even know what he took me in hell. He could have flew me there. I have no idea. I remember waking up, though, and my legs were gone. I woke up in a corner. I was leaning up against some garbage bags loaded with something. My legs were taken right out of the hips. Bone, everything, so that's kind of uneven. There's nothing flat, so I was kind of laying half on my side in these plastic bags. If I'd have known then what they had in store for me, I probably would have taken that minute to kill myself. But as it was, I was so upset that my legs were gone that I wasn't thinking clearly. Something wearing a white coat came over. As it got closer, I could see all the stains, and it jacked me again. That's when I woke up in the racks. See, they cut my leg off, well, both my legs, because they could sell them. Even an old, burned-out junker set of legs like mine will get you some good bucks. Even as I was despairing about my legs, I remember thinking, why didn't they take my arms? I've got the same web hookup as a lot of server monks do. I've got the same capabilities, same hardware. Not a lot of the people in the wastelands have that. So, I was lucky, I guess. They could have ripped it out of me and sold it, but they had other plans. I told you about the Aikido masks. And, I told you about how the eye software is out there in the community, but just like anything else, there's a dark side to the eyes as well.
That's what this was. See, like I told you before, the eye software was invented to be better than virtual reality. It was invented to be a dream. Well, just as there was pornography all over the web, sex cells, of course, erotic dreams became very popular. And just as in anything else, it kind of became a bit of a gateway. First, there was just, you know, simple dreams, sexual dreams, and then the dreams started catering to more and more of the fringe. Sick, twisted, perverted things that people wanted to do. And then, I don't know who thought it up. It's probably from the interrogations or whatever, because when you can interrogate people with dreams, well, you can imagine what that's like. The government wants to know something, they jack you full of enhancement drugs, hook you up with an Aikido mask, and then they have an interrogator who invades your dreams and tortures you until, well, he says what you want to know. Where the dream would take place for a hookup like that, you understand, for an interrogation hookup, what they use is there's a box and however many wires come out to Aikido masks that whoever needs to use it. They strap the subject down, they plug him into the box, and the interrogator gets plugged into the box. And when that happens, inside the box, in a program, they have a thing called a map. The map is where the dream takes place, so if you're dreaming you're in a torture chamber, then the map is the torture chamber. The torturer, of course, would then be the interrogator and whatever bots he wants to use inside. Like I said, I don't know who thought it up, but that's probably the easiest way for you to understand how it works. So what they did with me was they were in between surgeries there when I woke up. Second surgery was to open up my arm, both my left and my right arms, and install essentially like there's intravenous drips, but there's a way you can run it so that you can constantly flush the system and keep it running. It's for long-term comatose patients. They open up both arms and they have sensors that hook up to the hands to make sure that, you know, circulation's occurring properly and all the rest of it. So they needed to keep my arms so that they could keep me alive. And then they put me in the rack. The rack is like a... that's kind of like a morgue bed. Only really short. Yeah, this one was a custom job, I suppose, because the legs were gone. And I was set up to be a router. I got plugged in and I got to see everything that was going on. It was, what this place was it was a bazaar. It was like a market camp. It'd be like a free market in the city, but, like, if you were going to have a free market or whatever, you'd have an area that you'd do it in. And then, you know, whoever has the area collects, you know, $5 per vendor, that kind of a thing. But what this market was... it was out in the middle of the wastelands. It was steel walls welded out of junk and armor they found in the fringes. There was all sorts of things there. There was cameras watching everything, and all the cameras came into me because of my hardware. It was like I could see everything, but I couldn't control any of it. I was just like I was a router. I couldn't block anything. It was, imagine watching 200 different TV shows at once. It was, my brain was screaming, but the human mind, after 2 or 3 days of that, adapts, and you're able to kind of adjust. Those 3 days were hard, mostly because of the drug withdrawal. Between the slavers, drugs, and the crap that this guy was feeding me, there's no more reasons for anesthetic, so they just stopped it. I was strapped in, there's nothing I could do. They needed me clean so there wouldn't be so much noise. That's when I discovered the real horror of it. There's lots of these markets, these free bazaars in the wasteland. There's lots of them that have security. But for him to do this meant that, he was running a flesh site. What they do is they take people, humans that are alive, they hook them up with ocular masks, they take their legs up and open up their arms so they can be kept alive, and then they put them in the rack. All around me there was other people. I could feel them. We're separated by steel and tubes. Because I was the router, it never happened to me. But you see, part of the dark side of the eyes was that people got sick of just watching film of hurting people or sex with people or rape or whatever else. They got sick of it because it wasn't real. They wanted a real experience. So what they did was they took the same technology they used for these interrogations. They took people against their will and they hooked them into these maps. And then people all over the world could log into these flesh sites, choose a map, and do whatever they wanted to a real live person, real time. Their avatar was, looked like the person, only you had legs, of course, and you would appear. I never had it done to me, but I was the router. So what did that mean? That means that every single person that logged in had to send their signal through my mind. Their dream came through me. And so did the dream of whoever they were doing it to. Other people caught the racks with me. I was a woman who was running down the street with some city map. I got brutally raped and killed by this old man. I had the same map again. City rape map. Only this time I watched as a man had it done to him. In essence, that means that I am the man. I had the signal dream of some old guy who, some customer didn't like his father very much, so he logged in and ran this father figure type map and poured acid all over his face. You could feel it. The flesh running off of you. Your eyes got blurry as they burned out. Of course, no real damage was done. It was all just what you perceived to be. It hurt as much as a dream could. But dreams can hurt. while the dreams were happening, I tried not to focus on it. There was always someone doing something horrible in some part of my brain. I had no control of it. I couldn't even control my own mind. I was just this conscious thing, unable to interact. I was like that, I know, because I had a timestamp being a router, but I stayed like that for 94 days. It was pretty bad. I wanted to die. I remember screaming through the mask. But I was there. While these things were happening inside of my head, I tried to get out, you know, like there was nothing pleasant in any of this. There was nothing gentle. There was none of the erotic love that comes from the more classy versions of these. This was purely hatred, pain, perversion, hideousness. It was... I don't have the words to describe what it's like to see these things. I'm sorry, I can't really talk about that too much, but I guess you get the point. While it was happening, I tried to focus on other areas in my mind, you know, other things that were going on. I was hooked into all the cameras in the camp. There was an actual brothel there. There was a market where they sold limbs, the limbs of the people who I watched being raped and beaten and killed. I watched through multiple security cameras as they fed their signal through my mind. So, as the signal moved, I kept track of it. I couldn't retain anything. I mean, it just... everything that passed through me, of course, went out to another hardware switch, not a bio switch. Being a bio router is much faster, but I was the only one they had, so I got hooked into everything. It's a hell of a thing to know and see everything and not be able to affect it. They had dogs there. Canine units like Carcass, like my dog. Only these ones were from a prison complex. I don't know where they got them from, but they had 6 of them. And they had hooked them up with a wireless version of transmission masks as well, in case anyone tried to steal from the bazaar, from the market. I mean, it's hard to do, but it could be done. If you held the gates open from the walled region and you got in, got something, and got out before they could close the gates, they just release the dogs and record the images so that they could sell them later as well. I looked through the dog's eyes. I saw... I saw every single part that market. I know every single inch of that market. Doesn't do me much good now, though. It was 94 days later, after I got hooked in, somebody came into one of the flesh farm sections, the areas where they sold our limbs. I watched this guy come in, and I knew there was something odd about him, you know? He looked a little shifty, or maybe he looked shifty and he's just too casual, you know, just too easy does it, you know. It's a hell of a thing to walk into a place and just buy somebody's arm. He walked in and he asked for all the specs that matched my legs. He wanted to leg, a left leg, actually. Then the guy went back and pulled it out. Because of my particular blood type, I'm very my legs would get a good price. So we brought out the left leg in a cryo container. And then as he was sitting there talking with the guy, they were bantering, he asked if he could see the right wet leg as well, if he had a matching set. The guy said he did, but the set was expensive. Fine. He went back and brought out the other cryo case. Now the thing is with cryo cases, you can't see them. Because they're solid, right? You can't see the actual limb. There's a picture of it. Well, the guy said that he wanted to see the actual limbs. You know, he didn't believe the picture. He didn't want to just buy these limbs, get them home, and they're the wrong, you know, legs. They're not, you know, two left legs or something like that. He actually wanted to see them. The guy behind the counter, you know, he didn't really see it coming, so he said, yeah, you know, he didn't see much trouble because the cryo cases are pretty bulky. They look like a trunk, you know, it's quite large. So he popped the latches on one cryo case. And he popped the latches on the other cryo case and opened them up, and the guy looked in and he saw that there was my legs, which I could see too through the cameras. And he said it was perfect, and he shot him. The guy behind the counter, he shot him right in the face. The gunshot ripped through the air. I mean, it damn near blew out a couple of the mics. And he grabbed my legs, and as the knees bent, he just threw them in his arm, and he bolted out the door with a gun in his right hand, and my legs bent and crooked in his left arm. He ran through the door. He was fast. Probably enhanced with some kind of stimulant. I watched him as he ran down the street with these legs, and there was a bike waiting for him just outside. He jumped on the back of a bike. The driver was there, and they punched it. They made it through the front gates before the alarm even went off. And they released the dogs. Now the dogs, with their broadcasting hookup, they use the tail of the dog as like an antenna, a massive, massive booster, so that they can record where the dogs are, and then they've got their strike team, which would give chase. But these dogs, I mean, you can't understand how fast these things go, being prison retrieval dogs. I mean, there's no... I mean, we're talking about 100 to 140 miles an hour over uneven ground. I mean, these animals are heavily enhanced. If things are good, they're expensive. If they're very good, they cost the most. If they're unbelievably good and impossible to find, then the market would keep them. And that was the case with these dogs. They got the six of them. I don't know where they got them, but they were state of the art. The bike made good time because of the wireless transmission. I watched through the dog's eyes as they chased. The bike saw that they weren't going to be able to get away, so they threw the legs back. Two of the dogs stopped and ripped the legs apart. And their four kept going. It's funny because of the broadcast, you know, I could kind of taste the flesh of my own legs. Kind of gamey. Pretty tough. Anyway, the other four dogs, they got the guy on the bike in the middle of a turn. He couldn't keep up the speed, so the dogs took him off the bike, and the two of them got torn to shreds right there. They probably get more money for the bike, the parts, the video footage of their own death than they would have for my legs, so it came out on top. Even still, they beat the dogs when they got there for tearing my legs up. And then they brought them back. The morning winds had picked up pretty high. The remainder of the day, tried to quell the screaming of innocent people in my mind and not think about the fact that my legs just got torn apart in the middle of the desert. Up until that point, I guess I'd had some kind of a, maybe a hope, a wish that I'd be able to get them back somehow, you know, like maybe I'd get out of here some way, I'd get rescued, be able to get my legs back. But they were gone. They were destroyed. It was later that night when the winds picked up really, really hard and the dust came in. I was trying to do the closest thing I could to sleep. But after you've been on the stims and they treat you properly, you never really sleep. You just kind of, it's like being really tired, but you can never sleep. The best way I could use to describe it is imagine being at a party for too long and then you want to leave but you can't, and all the noise is happening and you can't leave and you can't say anything. So it's just this constant grinding, this constant mesh. The wind picked up really hard. With the storm, the bazaar shut down. Normally it would be open 24 hours, but even with the sandstorms, no one was going to do any business, so they just shut it all down. The wind got so wicked. I remember hearing the sound of the sand blasting the steel outside. Like I saw a scream, it just went on. And you hear rumbling, this deep burning rumbling. I thought it was just more of the wind, you know, pressing against the steel, but it wasn't. There was something else. There was something that was coming with the sandstorm. Something that was using it to hide its approach. Because I had the cameras all run through me, I got to see it better than anyone else. I could watch every part of the camp. And I knew it wasn't the wind blowing the steel. I know it wasn't the groaning of old metal. There was something in the sand. I could feel it. It was just when everyone else was starting to realize that it was happening that the lights came. Huge cutting searchlights through the sand as it blew through them like these beams, these pillars of white scattered static that swept through the camp with the sand, and then a massive explosion rocked the entire front. The gates were torn clear, taking half the wall with it. They came on steel treads and booted bodies with helmets and guns. They swept through the camp. I didn't know who they were until later, but they were soldiers, and they were moving very fast. They saw the cameras and just took them out, and I was watching as each one of my eyes around the camp got put out. The dogs were going insane, but they got slaughtered fast. I don't know if you've ever seen the soldier assault, but this was precision. There was more than just hatred here. There was something so pure, so perfect, so mechanical. They just murdered through the whole camp. I don't know what they were looking for, but they didn't. They weren't asking questions. They just went into a room and they were killing and killing and killing. Some of them had guns, some had knives, and they just moved through and they slaughtered everything, throwing the bodies down. They weren't here to take flesh. They weren't going to take them to flesh merchants. They were just killing. They killed everyone in the camp, all the merchants that were there, their families, their children. And I all watched as each one of my eyes went black. I saw them die. Then they saw the camera. I went out. Eventually, almost all my eyes got put out except for the ones on the rooftops. The seismic sensors I had hooked into me, I could feel them moving around the base so fast. They're making their way to the racks. They were coming here, and I knew my number was up. It was only going to be a matter of time. From the cameras inside the rack room, I could see the trays. They bust in through the doors and they started pulling the trays open, seeing the people there. And they killed them, each one. My rack was, well, it was about in the middle, and they made it about halfway through that. They got to me. They pulled me out. And I could see with my own eyes for the first time. They tore the mask off of me. And I looked around the room and I was waiting for it. I was waiting for that bullet to enter my head. And their faces and the goggles and the black oily paint they'd painted themselves with to blend with the nighttime of the wastelands. Like these afterbirth of war, they stank of death and the blood on their hands. But they didn't kill me. They dragged me out of there. And they brought me out to the edge of the wall of the camp. And I saw why they'd come. Then it became clear to me, because sitting outside the wall of the camp, sitting beside the man they call Prophet, was Carcass, my dog. And it became clear to me all at once what had happened. What had happened was is that when the dogs ran down the people who'd stolen my legs, they were broadcasting with their tails. They had huge, massive broadcasts. That broadcast must have reached pretty far into the desert. Carcass picked it up. And all the combat canines used the same frequencies. So he got the scent of me on it. And he known that this was the place that, well, I was last at. Carcass was traveling with me, and he left because he picked up a deep signal from the soldiers in the wastelands. They broadcast on frequencies that call soldiers out to join the company to work under Prophet, who leads them. They wander through the wastelands doing whatever it is that Prophet wants them to. They follow the man like he's a religious leader of psychotic killers. And they follow him. Prophet had enough hookups, and some people say he was military intelligence. I've heard rumors that he's able to cross into just about any frequency he wants to. I mean, he's been heavily wired. Some people say he's a dread man. I don't know. But I saw him there, his bald head and his strapped-on goggles. His body so old and withered and tight, covered with ink and oil. And everywhere that the oil and faded tattoos went, there was this deep kydex plastic armor and different ceramics he had sewn onto his body. He looked like this god of death. Carcass had picked up the scent of me, and he had interfaced with Prophet and told him. And somehow Prophet determined that it had to come get me, and that's what this attack was. It wasn't an attack. It was an extraction. Medics dressed up like these strange nuns, is the only way I can put it, came over and jacked me again with a hot shot military painkiller, and I was out. I woke up again on the roof of a tank. They had strapped me into the turret position, and Prophet was standing with the barrel between his legs, leaning forwards as though he was just bracing himself against the desert as the tank drove forward. Behind me, I could see that they'd built crosses and symbols out of wood and tied them together and hung bones and trinkets and fingers and hands from them. To the left and the right of the tank as it drove, there was people on bikes and other carriers, vehicles. A few enhanced recon scouts were running ahead of us with prosthetic limbs, like giant dog legs. They were tearing through the desert. It was daytime. And then this scarred face of one of the medics came over me and I blacked out again. The last time I woke up, and I haven't been drugged out since then, was when I was at the firebase in the deep wastelands, Prophet's firebase. The base is mobile. It can be broken down and moved, but it's a lot of work to do it. The base has gotten so huge, they've got over 1,000 soldiers there. They got a complete field unit hospital. And that's where I woke up, was in the hospital. Their hospital. Surrounded by soldiers and medical doctors. Men who'd been augmented so that they only had one function in life. To put together other soldiers that had been ripped apart by bombs and death. They didn't have a set of biological legs for me, so they did me a favor. They hooked me into a prosthetic set, which are what I have now and what I'm standing on now. They're very different than human legs. They're like dog's legs. They're recon scout legs that enable me to travel pretty quick once I figure out how to actually walk properly in them again. It's like walking around with your legs asleep. You can't really feel, but you kind of can. There's no nerves there, but it's, you have a vague awareness from the technology that was used. It'll take me a while to get used to them, but I'm about at the same height as I was before, about 6 foot. So they gave me back some legs. Well, any thought I had of sneaking around inside the arcologies now is pretty much gone. Of course, I suppose I could wear an overcoat or something. Legs don't bend out too bizarre. As long as I keep them covered, I'll be alright. I hear long dresses are back in fashion. After I woke up, he nodded, checked vitals. Soldiers aren't much for conversation, and well, neither was I at the time. I didn't know if these people were going to kill me or what, but I imagined they wouldn't. My brain was still screaming from not having the camera feeds anymore. It was like, I can't really explain it. You hooked into something like that for such a long time, and it kind of becomes a part of you, and then it's ripped away, and you're forced to be alone again. It was difficult, but I was free. I could move on my own. I could remember how to turn my head. I could learn how to move my arms. Both of them were so black and blue from the bruising of the surgery. I could barely even bend my arms. I was a wreck, but I was free. The medics came in and told me that Prophet wanted to see me. So as best I could, I steadied myself and went out. I went in to see him. He had his field headquarters. He was on sort of a watchtower in the middle of this camp, which was not really that tactically sound. I mean, anyone could hit it from a distance, but he didn't seem to care. He wanted to look out and see everything. There was some personal guards there that were rather elite. Long-range snipers, reconnaissance pathfinders. I don't know what they were, but they were anyone I definitely wanted to try to play with at all. I walked in there and he looked at me through his goggles. He sat down in that chair, still with his ceramic and leather and battlefield oil all over his body. He's wearing these bizarre, tight, short things. I don't know what they were, and these no shoes on his feet, no shirt, just strappings that held armor onto him. He looked at me from where he sat there and he said, "I like what you do." And I didn't know what to say. I mean, that's all he said. "I like what you do." And he reached in a pile of gear and he brought out a black case. It looked like a box, maybe a helmet box, you know? Tossed it to me and I caught it and my arms felt like they were on fire. And after a second he said, "You can go." The guards took me out of the room holding the box. Carcass was there. He left the room as well and he walked down with me. No one was saying anything. I didn't know what was going to happen now. I mean, I don't even know what was in this box. But they walked with me and they brought me back down to medical. The doctor signed off a few things, I guess. I don't know. And they led me over to their supply store and they set me up with a long coat, some clothing. Pretty nice bag, actually. And gave me some food, some scrap, some water. Bunch of other stuff in this bag. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but it goes on. And then they walked me to the edge of the camp and opened up the gates, and that was it. They just stood there. So I, best I could with these new legs, I started to walk. Carcass walked with me for about half a mile. That was when he stopped and sat down, looked at me, got up and walked away, walked back to the camp. I wished I could have said thank you, you know, because, I mean, it must have been him that saved my life. I mean, if he hadn't hooked in with the rest of the soldiers and told them about me, I don't know why they would have. I don't even know why they came for me now. But when I opened that black box they gave me, there's a reconnaissance helmet in here. And a reconnaissance helmet is it's a broadcast helmet. Which is what I'm wearing now and how I'm broadcasting to you. So I guess that's what he meant when he said he likes what I do. And that implies something else too, that I better keep doing it. So I don't want Prophet coming after me again. So here I am out here in the wastelands again. Carcass walked away a while ago and I guess I get to start again. I still have my knowledge stashed, so I'd be able to find it and get everything back. But this is still Independent Dynamic Librarian Sean Kennedy VI. Broadcasting in Quinlan's English from sometime after now. If you're hearing this maybe in the past, you might be able to prevent this world from happening, but maybe you can somehow make things better. Or if you are there when it's happening, you can try to stop these flesh fairs from happening. Please help me.